This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Michelle Norris. There's at least one on every campus, a class so popular, a professor so inspiring, that there's a waiting list to get in. This week, millions of college students are heading back for winter break, and we're going, too, to some of the country's best schools. We began this series at Harvard University with NPR's Anthony Brooks.
Harvard's Payne Music Hall, with its high raftered ceilings and elegant arched windows, was built for about 400 people. But three times a week, it's packed beyond capacity. On this day, students file in at the last moment and find a spot on the floor or high up in the balcony. They open laptops and notebooks as an elderly, bespectacled man in an Oxford shirt and tie takes the stage. At first glance, he's the professor from Central Casting, sort of like John Houseman in The Paper Chase. He shuffles his papers and looks up from the podium.
All set and ready to go?
The murmuring and shuffling ends, and the big hall falls silent. The course catalog calls this Historical Study B61, but everyone here knows it as the Warren Court. The man at the podium is Morton Horwitz of the Harvard Law School. His course studies the Supreme Court from 1953 through 1969, when Earl Warren was Chief Justice. And Horowitz tells his students that this court waged a constitutional revolution with landmark rulings on race, privacy, criminal rights, and obscenity.
Now, the subject of the Supreme Court and the obscenity decisions raises the most fascinating set of chicken and egg problems you can have.
At the heart of today's lecture is a big question. Did the Warren Court force the country to change, or did it respond to changes already underway? Horwitz knows all sides of every case, from Brown versus Board of Education to the decisions on national security and civil liberties during the McCarthy era, to the rulings that expanded criminal rights and the right to privacy. Today's focus, the rulings that liberalized obscenity laws, just as the sexual revolution, the women's movement, and the gay movement were beginning to percolate.
By the time the Warren Court was over, the legal rule was more or less on obscenity, anything goes. Does the law affect the rate or pace or direction of social change? Or alternatively, is it better and more usual to think of the law as reflecting social change? So, interesting question, hard to answer, but I would really like you to think about it fairly systematically.
This class is so sought after that enrollment is limited by a lottery. The winners, about 425, rate this course as difficult, with lots of reading and tough grading. But that seems to attract many of them. After all, this is Harvard. Lauren Chen, a freshman, says this is a chance to study with one of Harvard's most respected legal scholars.
I was like, Horwitz, you know, I heard about this class that was so huge that everyone had the lottery for it. There were like 800 people the first day. And then I looked at Professor Horwitz, got like a million hits on Google, and thought, well, this has to be, you know, I'm at this university for a reason. These are the types of resources that we're supposed to be taking advantage of. The surprise for me has been that the content is really interesting.
Sophomore Hodgkin Kim agrees and says Horwitz represents something of a rarity in an elite school like this, an eminent scholar who's still eager to engage undergraduates and make the material fun.
He really humanizes it, because I remember he was telling us about the Justice Douglas. He had four wives and they kept getting younger, and like he was gonna retire or something, but then Nixon wanted to impeach him, so he was like, no, I'm not gonna retire. I mean, it makes it so much more interesting to learn about the course, because you know that these people are like real and they have like the same vices that every other human has.
Horwitz's lectures are usually serious affairs, but now and then he lightens up.
Just to show you how hip I am, I'm going to sing for you a song, and forgive my inability to carry the tune. What is America to me? A name, a map, or a flag I see?
Earlier this fall, to illustrate post-war American attitudes, he actually serenaded his students with a Frank Sinatra song.
I see, but especially the people. Yes, especially the people. That's America to me.
Despite his inability to carry the tune, Horwitz's performance brought 425 cheering students to their feet. After class, Horwitz says, showbiz aside, there was real pedagogical purpose behind singing that particular song.
It ends one of its refrains from, All races and religions, that's America to me. This was by way of setting the stage for the fact that after the Second World War, something really important happened in racial consciousness. I'm trying to actually show these students that law is a vital product of social forces and ideas. And why I think they like the course so much is because you're able, through the lens of the law, to teach them history.
Which may well explain why Morton Horowitz's class is so popular at Harvard, where more than a few students have gone on to make history themselves. Anthony Brooks, NPR News.
Tomorrow, insects, science, and cartoons from the far side at Oregon State University.